Okay, we're in Daf Dalin. We're on Daf Dalin. I'm an Aleph at the top in the middle of the Gemara's discussion about Koresh. Koresh was a king, according to Chazal, he was a child of Esther. He was the king that allowed us to build the second Beis HaMikdash. He was the king of Modai, the Persian Empire, or at least part of the Persian Empire after Ahasuerus. And our sugya is one of the collections of the discussions of Chazal about how they viewed Koresh. And the Gemara takes the position that this sugya takes the position that Koresh began as a melech kosher, is a good guy, but things went sour at some point. We know that Koresh's record is that he allowed the building of the second base of Mikdash. In the secular records of history, this was part of Koresh's mandate that he did this throughout the empire. That he his approach, maybe mandate is not the right word, but it's his approach was to allow all the different religions to establish themselves. Nebuchadnezzar's approach was to squash all individual religions and bring sort of center them in Babel. And the Koresh was described in the histories the way that we would describe Perestroika, that there was a softening. And he allowed the different, and he even encouraged. We have a record that was discovered in the 1800s, that of a letter that Koresh wrote. I mean, we knew about it before, but he actually discovered evidence of it, where he allowed and encouraged all the different individual parts of the empire to establish their religion and establish their temples. Whether this was just as our sugya raises the question of how genuine it was, so in the secular histories, it's similarly questioned. Whether this was because he was this very tolerant person, wanted to encourage various religions. That's one approach. The other approach is that he thought it was a more effective way of governing. That if he would he would be tolerant to people's religions, and if he would have the support of the clergy, then he would have an easier time keeping all the different groups of the empire in line. So that's the debate, similar to the debate we have in the sugya, as to whether Koresh's intent to build the second Beis HaMikdash was of a genuine nature or self-serving. So that is raised in the secular histories as well. They say that there was an economic benefit that he had by allowing all the different groups to thrive. In our particular case, one of the Gemaras points out that Koresh is particularly lauded for giving back the tools of the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, Nebuchadnezzar had brought all the different kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, to Babel. And we know at the beginning of the Megillah, Ahasuerus parades them as a sign of his success and as a sign of that the 70 years that we thought were done already, that they weren't done, we're not going back. He made that he miscalculated the 70 years. So he brings out all of these two, all the kelim of a triumph. Now Koresh gave back the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash to Klal Yisrael, and that is discussed as that perhaps is an extra step that he took towards the Jews that he may not have done towards other religions. Chazal do not, as far as I know, Chazal do not address Koresh's allowing of the second Beis HaMikdash in the context of other religions. As far as I know, Chazal see it as Koresh having a as a Rabbeinu Shalom working history and giving Koresh a softening towards the Jewish people. And that's the way that we look at history either way. Whether, in fact, other nations achieved religious liberties or not, so that is the way that Klal Yisrael, we look at history as a Kadosh Baruch Hu was running the show, and running the show primarily for Klal Yisrael. Whether the other religions were also allowed, whether Koresh allowed us to build the second base of Mikdash as a particular favor of the Jewish people, or whether he allowed it in concert with an overall strategy, whether his strategy was one that was self-serving, whether his strategy was one that was genuinely tolerant. So all of that is, Klal Yisrael sees it, and those are all details. Kadosh Baruch Hu was running the situation so that Koresh would be in place, so that Koresh had that temperament, and that ultimately we build the second base of Mikdash. And that's everything else falls in place around what had to happen to the Jewish people. So now we came to the sugya because the Gemara says that Koresh had been so benevolent to the Jewish people that we gave him the status, not the status, but we gave him the covet of dating shtaros to Koresh. And we applied to Koresh the dating procedure that we would give to Jewish kings. So that's how we started the sugya. And the Gemara question, is that really so? So the Gemara points out that in an earlier part of history of Koresh's lifetime, so we then did count the months based on the Jewish king. Later on, so things became soured. That's the English and Hebrew expression is the same thing. In Hebrew is called hechmitz, become sour. The same, the relationship became soured. Our impression of Koresh became soured, and we lumped him together with other nations and gave him the dating that other nations had. How was he hechmitz? So that's what we discussed last week at the top of Dalam and Aleph, that Chazal determined that his benevolence to the Beis HaMikdash was self-serving. That what he wanted is that we should pray on his behalf. That's the very top of Dalet Amud Aleph. And that we pointed out last week, Michael was machaving to Rav Yosha that says that is not a criticism of Koresh. It's just a defense. In other words, this would not be the reason. It's a side discussion of what are expectations of Koresh. So last thing we learned is that we understand that Koresh's benevolence towards the Beis HaMikdash was self-serving. He wanted to pray for him. So the Gemara said that, but that's not a bad thing, because we're also allowed to do mitzvahs so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of us. So the Gemara says, but there is a difference between a Jew and a Goy. When it comes to a Goy, so if a Goy... if a guy does mitzvahs or good things as part of a deal with the Rabbon Shalom, so then if it doesn't work out for his benefit, he regrets doing the mitzvah. It's entirely a contingency. It's entirely a deal. And the Klal Yisrael, we understand that we can pray to the Rabbon Shalom many different ways, and we can pray by doing mitzvahs, and we can ask that our mitzvah should count for certain zechus, but if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not mekabelet, so we understand that we did not merit even the extra mitzvahs. This idea, now I forget exactly, this came up in the Das Zakenim in the Parsha, in Parsha's Toldos, as one of the differences between Esav and Yaakov. Forget how he pointed out, and I will look it up again today. I saw it on Friday. And the Das Akenim records this Gemara and this distinction. It comes up in Shas in two places. One over here, with two contexts. And the other is when Shlomo HaMelech dedicated the Beis HaMikdash. So he said all nations are going to pray through the Beis HaMikdash. But when he said that Klal Yisrael will pray through the Beis HaMikdash, so he made it contingent upon Klal Yisrael doing mitzvahs. When he prayed on behalf of the non-Jewish nations, he did not make it contingent on them keeping mitzvahs. So the Gemara explained that Shlomo Melech understood that that he prayed harder for the non-Jewish nations. He wanted that because Baruch Hu should cut them more slack, because they will not extend the Kadosh Baruch Hu the courtesy that if they don't get what they want, that this is because they don't deserve it. They don't see it. And we pointed out that this is really a principle in Avodah Zarah, that Avodah Zarah, you're always, the Avodah Zarah Nick is negotiating with the God, but it's not based on conduct, it's just based on providing. And for Kal Yisrael, it's part of a much broader relationship. So the Gemara says that, so that's the Gemara says, so therefore we are different in that regard. However, en route, the Gemara did point out this braisa, v'atanya, ha'omer sela zu litzdaka, b'shvil sheyichyu b'ni, u'b'shvil she'ezge bo l'chay olam haba, harbeza tzadik gomer. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 7 lines from the top. So let's zero in this braisa. The braisa says that if a Jew says, I'm giving this to tzedaka, and I'm davening with it, that one's child should become well, or I'm giving it, I want a good chelik in olam haba. So the Gemara, how is that tzadik gomer? He's gemaldik. He's good. So the tzadik gomer. So we pointed out last week that there are three different interpretations. One is haveza tzedaka gemura. There's another girsa. This is perfect tzedaka. Or another girsa is in the context of tzedaka, it's great tzedaka. So the or it's pashtus and haveza tzedaka gemura. He's doing good things. So Gemara says, and that appears in Shulchan Aruch in a certain way. Shulchan Aruch divides up this situation into, obviously one can daven for anything. Then when one does mitzvahs, the Gemara says, I can say, I want this mitzvah to be a schus for a certain Yeshua. It could be any mitzvah. We often do it with learning. We make a mishaberach, especially by the Sefer Torah, because we have in mind, we want the schus of the learning to help out the whole as well. So we can, any mitzvah we can say, I would like a daven, that the schus of this mitzvah should be directed for a certain Yeshua. Okay. And then the Gemara says, and it comes at tzedaka, one more step. This particular Gemara, ha'omer sela zu litzdaka, I'm going to give this to tzedaka, b'avur sheyichyu b'ni. So the Gemara says in Pesachim, that could be any mitzvah. Tzedaka is only an example of that. However, the Gemara goes a step, the Shulchan Aruch goes a step further and says that we're not allowed to test the Rabbanu Shalom. We can't say to Kadosh Baruch Hu, let's test this out. Person can't say, Gemara says, if I daven v'sikin, so I'll have every travel. I can't test it out. And then they say, no, I daven v'sikin, but it happened. Kadosh Baruch Hu, the one thing that we're allowed to test out is the bracha of aser kedesha tis aser, to give maaser, and we will become rich by giving maaser. That's the one thing that a person is allowed to test the Rabbanu Shalom, so to speak. And the Achrayim say it's davka maser k'sofim, not staka. It's the lesson we put in last week. Staka is the obligation I have to take care of the poor, and it comes in at least two forms. One is an obligation to give a certain amount of money, which is not that much. I don't know the exact amount, but I know that if you give 5 cents a day, then you're kind of the mitzvah quarter for sure. It's not that much money. And to be responsive to the poor that come, that if we can afford it. And then, in addition to tzedakah, then there's a lot of chasadim we can do. A lot of things beyond tzedakah. The mitzvah tzedakah is to take care of the poor. So in all the different forms that happens. And then, probably kiruv and schools and bigger cholim funds, all those are probably not classic tzedakah. One doesn't have to be poor rachmanu litzlan to receive those benefits, but they can come from one's ma'aseh k'sofim. One should have in mind when one works that one will take from one's ma'aseh k'sofim and give it to any form of chesed. Okay, so now the Gemara says, so now the Shulchan Aruch says that when it comes to ma'aseh k'sofim, a person can say, I expect to be rich if I'm giving a true sense of maaser. And the Pesachei Tshuva puts a damper on it. Pesachei Tshuva says that aser to aser, aser kedesha tisas share, is in the context of giving maaser on tvua, maaser on produce, and therefore would not apply to maaser ksofim. And as we pointed out last week, that there are different ways of defining wealth that doesn't have to be defined in the way we define wealth. As he's pointed out, Vegin Lilbush, Lechem Lechel, the sixth parsha. And then after that, that's Osher. So that's the deal on this Gemara. Now, the Rashi has a phrase that says that the distinguishing feature between the Jews and non-Jews in this situation is that we are not temeyin al harishonos, that we don't regret. So the different ways of explaining that. Does that mean that as I've been explaining until now, that the criticism against the non-Jews is that they see it as a deal and they'll be upset if the deal doesn't go their way? Or does it mean it's further that they really regret having given the tzedakah and they don't want to give the tzedakah in that case? It's total contingency. And with Jews, it's not a total contingency. It's that we give the tzedakah, it's a tefillah, it's a prayer. We hope that our prayer will be in Mukubal, but if it doesn't come true, then we accept and we gave tzedakah. We were mispalel, because Baruch Hu did not, we were not zocher from what we thought we could be zocher, or God is a different cheshbon. Now, the top Tosfos is the Tosfos that asks the question that in the beginning of Masechtas Amos, so Shemayin Atalian say that we should we should not be those kinds of subjects that do mitzvahs on contingency. We should be the ones who do mitzvahs because we want to do mitzvahs. So the Gemara said this goes against our sugya. Our sugya says, Sadi Gomer, if you're doing a mitzvah on contingency, you should not regret it if it didn't come out true, if it didn't work your way. It didn't work out the way that we wanted it to work out. So doesn't that go against the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, don't be that kind of a subject that does mitzvahs shalei lishma. So the Gemara, so the Taser says, well, that's the story. Our Gemara is talking about Jews, and the Mishnah is talking about non-Jews. That the Shemayin HaTalmid is telling non-Jews, don't be those kind of a subject. So the Mefarshim say non-Jews. Oh, Mishnah almost is for Jews, not for non-Jews. So why would Shemayin HaTalmid address non-Jews? We pointed out that it says that the Tosfos means to say that that a Jew can sometimes act as a non-Jew. So if a Jew acts as a non-Jew, so then that's what this mission is addressing. Now, we shouldn't be, Tosfos says, if a Jew does miss a contingency, then he's picked up the practice, a non-Jewish practice. Good. So now the Gemara says, so what was the flaw of Koresh? The flaw of Koresh was, go ahead, Michael. Yeah.
But we
do have evidence that Talmud Torah is also learnings also Matzali Mamas David and Melech. So that mitzvahs can be a protection from visa that might not be exclusive to tzedakah. Right? The guy that collects in the Beis Olam, he wants you to believe it's exclusive to tzedakah. That might not be necessarily. If he says Talmud Torah Tassani Mamas, he has an empty box in today. Good. So the Gemara goes on to suggest, Ema, me no longer Achmed. How do I know that? What's the source that Kurish soured and he went bad? The Siv Nidbok in the oven says that when Kurish commissioned the building of the second base of Mikdash, so he said there should be rows of stone. The oven Galal Tulsa, three rows of stone. Vinidbach the Chadas, Vinafkasam and Base Malka Tisyahiv. And there should be one row of eighths of wood. Three rows of stone and 1/8 of wood. So Gemara says that Lomalei the Amarachi, why did he have any wood in the second base of Mikdash? Stone, building with stone. So why introduce a row of wood? So Achi Savar Imardu Bar Yedoi Ikali Benura. So the Gemara says, you know why? Because Kairish was ready. If we would rebel, he would burn the whole base of Mikdash down. So Gemara says, you see, that he didn't come to the base of Mikdash in a genuine way because he believed that the base of Mikdash was the major religion and the only religion he wanted to give us a base of Mikdash. He wanted to keep it very tight. When he built the base of Mikdash, he wanted us to live in fear that he could destroy it anytime and destroy it at will. Gemara says, 1 second. Shleim alay amen achi. Shleim Melch also put wood in the base of Mikdash. Shleisha Turei described as Shleisha Turei Gozes Vitur Kerusei Serozim. Three rows of stone and one row of cedar. It says stone was different. Shleim Avad Melmala the Avad Lamata. Shleim Shaki Vinyana. Yule Shaki Vinyana. Shleim Sadi Vesida. Yule Sadi Vesida. Shleim did three different things. One, three things that are different than Kairish. Why does he put the wood near the top? So that would not destroy the building. Number two is he put the wood inside sometime. Apparently it was surrounded by stone. And third is that he then put lime around the wood. So he actually fireproofed the wood. So Shlomo Melach, there was the reason to put wood as part of the Beis HaMikdash, but he made sure that he did whatever he could to fireproof it. And Kairish did not do that. Kairish put wood there, and he didn't. And Dav could put it low so that he could set fire to the entire building. So Gemara says that is an indication, Shehichmetz, that he wasn't as genuine as he presented himself. In other words, that he gave us, he gave the base HaMikdash to us with a short leash. That he was, that would support the idea that he was using the base HaMikdash in a way to control us and to make curry favor with us.
The Gemara says, a third possibility, Mehacha. By Yoimeli Amel, the puzzle that we began with, when Nehemiah approaches Kairish and asks Nehemiah to rebuild the second base of Mikdash, by Yoimeli Amel, Vashegel Yeshevis Etzlo. The king spoke to me, Vashegel Yeshevis Etzlo. Ad Mosai Yiye Malchoch U Mosai Toshev. So the king says, I'm going to release you and allow you to build the second base. What's the picture we have?
We have the picture of the king sitting by Shegel Yeshev. What's the Shegel? My Shegel. Oh, my name. The Shegel. My Shegel. My, what's the Shegel? Oh, my Rabba Barlema Mishmei de Rav Kalbisa.
The Shegel could be interpreted as a mistress. I think they call it a consort, as a female
a female aid or accompaniment. So the Gemara said, no. This sheik was a cob with a dog. He had intimate relations with the dog. And so now the Gemara was going to debate whether it was a dog or not. So the Gemara says, are you convinced that the shegel is a dog? Because when Daniel describes the monarchy, says you elevated yourself in a pompous way over the Ribbono Shel Olam, and you have the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, and the Rav Ribbonoch Shenglosach Ulachenosach Cham Rishosin Boy. And you and the Shego were drinking wine. The Shego Kalbasa Basmashtai Chamra. So obviously the Shego is a human being. And Daniel was describing how they were sitting with great pomp, and each one was living a luxury. So Shego is not a dog. You don't say, and you and the dog were drinking wine. The Gemara says, Holy Kasha. The Malfulay Vishasya. Why not? Why not? He gave the that was also a way that he took care of the dog. Now, Rashi points out the Kalbasa, the Mishkav. Having the dog there wasn't stop having a pet. Having the dog there was the Mishkav for bestiality. Ubenei Noyach, who is a Rokach. And Bnei Noyach, non-Jews, are also non, there are many halachos of arayos, of inappropriate relations that apply to Bnei Noach as well. So our expectation of Bnei Noach is also that they will have, that they cannot have adulterous relations. And bestiality is also something that is, that the Bnei Noach are prohibited. Because when it says Vayu Lavasa Rechon, that when we get married, we can join Yotzu Beim Vachaya Va'oif. So that means that God does not want any human being to conjoin in any way with an animal. So the Gemara says that that's the idea of Koresh Hechmetz, that Koresh lived on this on this inappropriate and depraved level. So Gemara pushes back still. Dechseh benois milochim v'koresech nitzva shegel leminach. David HaMelech, when he describes the royalty, so he describes that the women were standing shegel leminach v'kesem oifir. And the shegel was there on the right, and he was the shegel was all dressed up. The Gemara says, "V'shegel kalvasai, ma'ikom evaselu, navi li Yisrael." And if the shegel was a dog, so what are the when the navi describes or David HaMelech describes this aspect of the monarchy? So what was he pointing out? So Gemara says, "Hachi ka'amar." Bischar Shechaviva Terel Yisrael, Kishegal Umaisa Oilam, Zachisim Likeser Ophir. So he says that, no, it means that just like this kind of a dog is favored by the non Jewish world, that's how dear the Torah was to Klal Yisrael. This particular Gemara came to my mind this week because I'm not saying Lachal Maisa now, just the background. With the advent of Corona and more people purchasing pets, so now, halacha stands that pets are muktzah. Gemara says that animals are muktzah. What does muktzah mean? Muktzah, you can't move them. You're allowed to pet because you're not allowed to pet a pet. You're allowed to, because you're not moving the pet, right? Muktzah is also to move muktzah. You're allowed to touch muktzah. You're allowed to, you can't be, you can't use mukta, but you can't move mukta. All right. Taking a dog for a walk. All right, that's the dog's walking on his own. You're only leading the dog. The separate issue of being machamer, person to push the dog along, you can't do. So that now. So there, the question that post going to have to discuss is whether pets are still mukta. Why do I say that? Because historically, the concept of a pet is fairly recent. In the Gemara's time, they didn't have pets. The Gemara discusses animals. They were work animals. Animals didn't have the comfort of home. Animals were animals were talking about the cows and the horses, or if they're dogs, the dogs that were working with the sheep. So the concept of a pet didn't come up till relatively recently. So in all the svarim, an animal is not something that's in the house. The animal, we're talking about chickens, you're talking about livestock. So they're muktzah, fine. That's what a good business item. So the question that's been raised already for 20 years, 30 years, is whether we should reevaluate the halacha of pets. Because when an animal is part of one's parnasa, when animals are a work animal, okay? When animals are not part of the household, so then they're muktzah. What about an animal which is a toy? So now it's, why should it be muktzah? So that is a question on Shulchan Aruch. Whenever halach and Shulchan Aruch is being reevaluated, so it has to be reevaluated by the Gedolei Yisrael, because it's talking about making a very, very important judgment. The precedent for making this kind of a change would be that there is a Tosfos, there is a Rosh, the back of the, I think, Masechta Zvei, I think, that talks about the birds, that the palatial birds, and apparently really back in the time of the early Ashkenazi Rishonim, so you're talking about back in the 1400s, earlier, the 1300s, so royalty had palatial birds. And there, the Haggai Sashri says that if a Jew would either reach royalty, or if a Jew would have these birds that are mitzavshef, that are in the house, you take care of them, they're part of the household, so to speak. They're not carrier pigeons. They're pets, whatever. So he argues that they should not be mukta because they're not michutz l'das, they're part of one's thinking. So that sort of like a dormant source happens to anybody who would raise it. So again, so it's the kind of thing where I wouldn't be surprised in the next few years, so Gedolim will discuss it and come to a different conclusion. But this Gemara would argue otherwise. Because this Gemara says that even in the time of Kurvish they had pets. Kurvish had a pet dog. Right? And it wasn't something, it was something that they saw as being terribly inappropriate. It wasn't more than a pet. It was more than a companion dog, a shegel, right? So the argument that many svarim are saying that Chazal did not have the concept of pets, that dogs in the time of the Gemara were guard dogs, they were watchdogs, they were shepherd dogs, all the arguments, and therefore when Chazal said that dogs are mukta, they were talking about those kinds, they were talking about the household dogs. So now you see from this Gemara that they did have, that the concept was there. Now here you have to go very careful. It could be that Jews never had a shegel. In other words, it could be that there wasn't such a thing as a pet dog. It could be that there was work dogs. And then, in a depraved society, they had the companion dogs, so to speak. So I'm not sure whether this Gemara is a significant contribution to the sugya. And on one end, you could say, you see, they had dogs as pets, and Chazal said, Apple became the muktzah, and nothing's changed. You could say, no. Nobody had dogs as pets. Dogs were work animals. Life has changed. Times have changed. Our dogs are like the palatial birds. They had a shegel. That was nobody. And Kal Yisrael had a shegel to have a companion animal. Chazal didn't think in those terms. So that's why it was, this Gemara came to my mind this week, whether this Gemara would be a significant source when the halacha becomes rediscussed. So the Gemara says that as one final attempt as to whether a shegel is in fact a kalbus or a dog or a female consort, the Gemara says, perhaps the shegel is the queen. It's a consort. It's a woman. So then the question is, if the queen was sitting next to him, so why didn't I say the queen was there? Why did the shegel was there? All right, so the Gemara says that the Gemara leaves it as a machlokes as to whether Koresh had an intimate relationship with an animal, and was that the reason that he is considered to have a downturn and do what he was. So the first suggestion, which we're not sure, what are we sure of? The Gemara has two suggestions. So far, where Koresh soured, where our opinion of Koresh soured. One is that he put into the Beis HaMikdash wood, and he put the wood in the Beis HaMikdash as a way of holding it over our heads and saying, I can set fire to the Beis any day I want. The next is that he had a shegel. So Gemara says, that's a machlokes if he had a shegel. Did he have was he actively, publicly performing bestiality in the dog sitting right next to him, or was that the queen? Okay, I'm a chalikis. Then we have the first suggestion that perhaps he lost his strong reputation because his building of the Beis HaMikdash was for ulterior motives. Okay, so the Gemara says that's what we were pointing out. That's one way to read the Gemara because it's Viva Yisema. And Yashub said maybe that's not the right way to read the Gemara. So then one final Gemara says, Ima yis ema, minolon de ichmet meyacha, ad kesev kikrin. When the Gemara describes what Koresh provided, when Koresh commissioned the second Beis HaMikdash, he was a very good guy because he not only provided for the second Beis HaMikdash, the building, but he also provided for the ongoing korbanos of the second Beis HaMikdash. He writes, Ad Ksav Kakrin Moed, Ad Chitin Karin Ma'a, that he would give, he would provide the bread that were necessary. Ad Chamar Batin Meya, Ad Batin Meshach Ma'ach, and Malach Deloksiv, and he provided a set amount of wine and a set amount of oil, and a non-disclosed and open amount of salt. The Gemara says that Meikra Beloiki Tzusa Fahashta Biki Tzusa. You know we went wrong because the first one, when Nehemiah came to us, you have to build the second Beis HaMikdash. So he said, whatever you need. Later on, when Ezra spoke to him, he said, I'll give you a certain amount. The Gemara says, that's what upset the Jews. At first it was, Kiyad Rachmas HaMelech, whatever is necessary, then he said a certain amount. So the Gemara says, is that fair? Maybe he didn't know how much he was getting himself into. So he said, build the Beis HaMikdash and I'll take care of all the services. He was thinking about his temple. They didn't know that we had Karbonis in the morning, Karbonis in the afternoon, that we had a Yom Tov and had the Sukkahs of 70 Karbonis as Karbonis. So he didn't know what he was getting into. So then he said, okay, he renegotiated. It's all Mitov Leib, the Gemara, right? And the Machvarta Kedishin Meikra. That if you want to understand, where did Koresh, why did he lose favor, fall from favor in the eyes of the Rabbanim? So the last one we're dropping, So it's either because of the Shego, or because he put the wood in the Beis HaMikdash in such a way that he maintained control, or possibly because he built the second Beis HaMikdash with ulterior motives. Michael, go ahead.
The first and third case, when it was the wood that's placed,
yeah,
like strategically, or the amount of carbonos that he's providing, there the Hamonam would see, okay, perhaps that he's not the wonderful person.
The woman for the guy, yeah.
But the Shego, if it's in his palace, if it's inside, unless he's really walking, it's a very internal, not that it's...
So what I was thinking is that it's recorded in public meetings. In other words, it wasn't this is not the privacy of his bedroom. This is, he's literally holding court. This is an official presentation. So if he's sitting there.
He's grazing.
Right. So apparently everybody knew what the dog was for. So taking a step back and looking at the sugya, so we have to figure out what are Chazal telling us? Is it really, here you have a man who built who allowed us to build the second Beis HaMikdash, right? And we're not expecting him to be a tzaddik yisod olam, to be such a, we're thankful he let us build the second Beis HaMikdash. That Jews dragged him around and said they shouldn't build it, they were rebelling. So we even negotiated through that and survived that. Okay? So, is it fair to say that in a private life he had a depraved habit? So that makes us look at him differently. In other words, when Chazal described the goodness of Kairosh, so they describe based on Mikdash, they describe he actually gave us back the Kalim based on Mikdash. I get it. Then when Chazal said, well, we know how he lost favor and eyes, hey, he didn't do it in a genuine fashion. So we don't necessarily accept that approach. But how does that change the picture? They first thought it was genuine and thought it was not genuine. It was all the same time. He gave the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Or when Chazal say that he had a contingency that we're on a very, very short leash. Okay, but is that such a terrible thing? He let us build a second Beis HaMikdash. He let us come back to Eretz Yisrael. He is exposing himself for a possible rebellion in fifth column. Nope. So he has to give us a short leash. He's not giving up the empire. Or the Shego, that he had a animal concert. That's his private life. What does that have to do with? So he's either one of the Sheva Mitzvah Noach. But at the end of the day, this is his private ongoing. So to say that he wasn't a good guy, you got it. To say that he had a terrible flaw and a flaw of depravity, I get it. But to say that he's not the Kairosh, he's not the man he was. According to some Chazal, we mentioned last week, Kairosh was never seen to be, he was never seen to be a person of such lofty stature. And Shalach Yodei Menachor, said last week. But however you put it together, unfair and overly exaggerating some of his flaws. When you put it in light of he let us go back to Eretz Yisrael, let us build the Beis HaMikdash. So how can you say Hechmetz, he lost all of his chain amongst the Jewish people because of some private, because he's over one of the Shemis v'nei Nayach. So I was thinking that we don't really know, right? And to say that the whole approach of Chazal would do a 180 based on this. There is a discussion. I was trying to spade around in various articles in academics as to try to figure this out. So I did come across one suggestion by Professor Orbach. Professor Orbach was a very noted professor at the Hebrew U, and trouble with my sounds. Okay. That and he pointed out that the Tanoim who reevaluated Korosh and Saul being a bad guy, they all come from what he called the third century, but 300 years, a little bit less after Churban Beis Hamikdash. And at that time, the economy was in a very bad strait, and Koresh did put the clamps. We know one thing that Koresh did, he put the clamps on immigration out of Bavel. And that seems to be for economic purposes. Then as more Jews were draining out of Bavel, he said, we can't do this. He had like the bubble white papers. You can't go to Eretz Yisrael. So that was seen as one of the events that that aggravated Klal Yisrael. That he didn't, but the same question comes up because he was acting out of the interest of his own people and his empire. Does that take away from the, is allowing us to build the second base of Israel coming back to Eretz Yisrael? So that's what I was trying to figure out. And even if it's the leadership of the, what we call the third century, so they're saying that Koresh is now a different, he doesn't deserve. You know what you say, Michael?
Could it be that if they're looking at Koresh's actions, yeah, that his actions later on impact on the Beis Hamikdash itself. There were aspects of the second Beis Hamikdash that were not in the first Beis Hamikdash. There were specific items and nisim and certain things that didn't take place in the second Beis Hamikdash that took place in the first. And I don't know if they're saying that these are things that are at a metaphysical level, so to speak, impact on.
Why would that be viewed as Koresh going sour, so to speak? Then Koresh hechmetz.
You have the ability to have a Beis Hamikdash at a higher madrega, and his actions.
So what you're saying is that the Rabbanan reevaluated even the very beginning of Koresh's idea.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a great answer, but
right. You have to say something along those lines, because the first two all suggestions of why Koresh was Hechmetz, they're all come from the beginning of Koresh. In other words, when Nehemiah came to Koresh and said, we want to build a second Beis. That's when the shekel was sitting there. And when he designed the Beis HaMikdash so that there would be wood, that was the beginning of the Beis HaMikdash, right? And when he said, build the Beis HaMikdash, have me in mind that that was the beginning. So it could not be that Chazal are saying that Koresh will allow us to build the second Beis HaMikdash. Something happened to him over time. It has to be that the Rabbanan are saying that we look at things differently. No? I mean, isn't that necessary in the Gemara? Because all of the arguments that Koresh had a Yeridah, that we have reasons for us not to respect him, they really all go back to the beginning of Koresh. So apparently, if you put out the one thing that Koresh did that was to the great detriment of the Jewish people is that at some point he stopped Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. At some point he said, and apparently it seems when I was able to gather because it was a brain drain. Okay? So apparently, the way that if we put it together, it means that after Koresh did something against the Jewish people, so then that forced the rabbis to reevaluate the goodness that they saw initially. Initially, they saw Koresh as benevolent, as Koresh as being respectful of all religions and accepting Kalihu to some extent. Oh, then he should be compared to a Melech Yisrael. Right? And we gave many interpretations yesterday compared to a Jewish king because he's part of Jewish legacy, part of the Jewish, he's part of the Jewish faith and destiny, I should say. Now, they look back and they say, he really wasn't interested in having a relationship with the Jewish people. It was all self-serving. How do Chazal express it? So Chazal expressed it by saying, short leash. He didn't really believe he needed a Beis HaMikdash. He has the, it's the Beis HaMikdash is there with a push button, flame throwing, within, 2 or 3 people can come, torch it, done. Very short leash is there to keep us in check. Or he came with ulterior motives. Okay, so they're saying, when you look back and say, he wasn't interested in a flourishing Jewish, an independent Jewish state. So if it was just the first, he said, pray for me also. Okay, we often say, pray for me, have me in mind also. But later on when we saw that he stopped the Aliyah to Israel, so then we understood that initially the wood that was there was done with intention. And I would suggest that is the deal with the Shegel as well. Why did Chazal pick on was essentially a private issue? A private depraved act. Why does that say, and especially since that Shegel was there from the very beginning? So my understanding is that when a person has, God forbid, that kind of an intimate relationship with a dog, with an animal, so that means that that becomes an entirely self-serving relationship. In other words, a relationship with the person who's practicing bestiality, apparently it's not because he has an intimate relationship with the dog and that he's and it's a meaningful relationship. It's entirely using this part of nature to be entirely self-serving. So I think that's what I would suggest. Is that Chazal were saying the picture of Koresh with the parading his relationship is the insight that it was all done for Koresh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu used it for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu used this moment to help the Jewish people. But his concern for other religions, this was the way that he kept his empire in check. And that's what I'm suggesting. That it wasn't hachmitz, it wasn't anything went different for, it was that the way that the rabbis looked at Koresh changed. So initially the rabbis looked at Koresh as HaKadosh Baruch Hu was bringing redemption through them, whatever it is, he deserves to have the covenant of a Jewish king, to have a covenant of Gula. But then after he stopped, after he issued the white paper, and he said, this is not working out well for me. So then they went back and reevaluated. And the review of Koresh changed. And they reevaluated the wood that was there was done in a very shaky fashion, a sleazy fashion, a sketchy fashion, right? And then they said, and look what he said. He said he's doing it only because we'll pray for him. So at that time, we let it roll off. And now we understand what he was saying. And the Shegel, he wasn't capable of having it. It wasn't. Having a relationship where one gives and provides, that's not who he was. He set up a picture. He is with the Shegel to say, this is going to be good for the monarch. That's what I suggest is happening in this Gemara. That it was that the view of the rabbis in light of the one thing that we do know that he God turned the faucet off and the and Jews going from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. So perhaps that's the deeper meaning of this disappointment occurs.
Can we say that it was in the beginning, we looked at the facts. Okay, he let us go build Beis HaMikdash. We were looking at results. And then Chacham looked at it and says, no, we have to look at his character. And there's a big character flaw in him. And so that's the way they reevaluated Koresh. And they said, if with such a character flaw, we can't give him like Malchi Yisrael.
Yeah, that's possible. I was thinking about that. It's just I didn't want to get political, but that's possible. Speak to me in 2 months, okay? Okay. That's certainly very possible, and very contemporary. Yeah.